First off, it's all about the you.
Break them.
Welcome back to another episode of the CanesInsight.com podcast. This is your boy Larry, and this time we're back with a mega cast of characters to discuss all of the big news. We got D Money, we got Tano, and we got the LeBron James of recruiting, Peter Ariz. Listen, for those of you who have been hiding under a rock, let me just run down the series of events over the past 48 hours that the University of Miami has had. It's been big. First, we got Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA. He holds a press conference not to announce the notice of allegations against the University of Miami, but to announce of the substantial improprieties by the NCAA in their investigation of Miami. This is pretty big. Listen, it includes, but is not limited to, keeping Devin Shapiro's attorney on payroll, a ton of information that they used in our potential notice of allegations, possibly thrown out the window. That's big news on every front. Then we got D Money and a few others broke news that Florida State assistant James Coley was being close to being offered our new offensive coordinator position. He accepted the position. That's big news on that front. Covers a lot of bases. He's a big-time South Florida recruiter. Also, the Miami Hurricanes men's basketball team, with a ton of football recruits present, destroyed the number one-ranked Blue Devils 90-63. Big night. Fellas, I can't recall Miami having this good of a 24 hours in a long, long time. How are you guys feeling?
Feeling really good, and really, there's a lot left ahead in these next couple of weeks. This investigation of the investigation is supposed to be wrapping up in about 7 to 10 days. You know, it's amazing, it's a two-year investigation, and once they realize that they screwed up, you know, they're working around the clock and getting things done quickly. But Emmert says it's going to be 7 to 10 days, and obviously sign day is right around the corner. We're going to learn a lot about Coley in these next few days. So it's really going to be an interesting couple weeks coming off a great day yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, obviously. First, you know, so many things to touch upon, but the basketball game, you've got the national media talking about our basketball team as potentially the best team in the ACC, which is ridiculous in and of itself. And on top of that, on an even grander scale, if that's possible, this whole NCAA issue it's put everybody in a frenzy. It's bittersweet in a way, because you'd hope that the best news to come out of our, you know, of Miami would be something that occurred on the field. But when it's something like this, I'll take it. I don't remember having felt this good in quite a while about the program. And then obviously, Coley, which, like you guys said, we'll talk about later, just, for a variety of reasons, including but not limited to just yanking Jimbo Fisher's chain right off his neck and kicking sand in his face. That's always a good thing. So, yeah, yesterday was a great day. It continued to today, and with signing day coming up, I think we're in store for probably the best 2-3 week period that we've had here since we won a national championship.
And like Tano said, I'm really excited about the direction of the basketball program. Been following it for about 10 years now, and I've never seen a buzz like this surrounding it. It's just amazing to see what Coach Larrañaga has done in less than 2 years here, and really a lot of buzz around the school. Second sellout in a row, play FSU on Sunday, so it's really exciting to see what's happening there. And I'm really, really excited about this James Coley hire. He's a Miami guy. He's Miami through and through. And, you know, I've just been talking to a lot of these high school coaches around here and some players, and they're really excited about it as well. So it's just going to be an exciting next couple weeks heading into signing day.
First things first, guys, let's get in depth about the biggest news of the day, and that is the NCAA suspending their investigation against the University of Miami based on improprieties of their investigative staff. Boys, what are your thoughts on this?
the two big takeaways that I got, I mean, obviously just the headline, which is Nevin Shapiro's lawyer was on the NCAA's payroll. I mean, that really speaks volumes, just that sentence. That's really all you need from this scandal here. And the other thing that caught me off guard was just how passionate Emmert was and how upset he at least appeared to be in his press conference. I mean, you really don't see the NCAA squirm like that and admit fault that strongly. It really makes me think that the two Penn State lawsuits, the USC lawsuit, which they're getting hammered with and really taking a beating in the courts, how much that's getting to Emmert and how much this public perception is getting to him. And that really helps UM, because the fact that they messed this up so bad, and I suspect that as you peel back a couple layers on this onion, it gets even worse, that's going to give UM some leverage going forward if they want a potential settlement, or really if they just – if they even go through with the process, it's going to really deter the NCAA, in my opinion, from doing anything to upset the apple cart, because if they get a lawsuit from UM on top of what they're already facing, and they're open, they're subject to discovery, and they're subject to all the dirty secrets coming to light, it could be a huge problem for an organization that's really suffering with this image right now. So I think as far as UM goes, the balance of power has shifted to UM. Where that goes remains to be seen, but it's obviously a good thing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. It's the irony of all ironies that the NCAA, completely independent and autonomous governing institution, not subject to, you know, to any sort of rule of law in terms of government interference, will now be subject to the judicial process when they don't actually afford the subjects of their investigation any due process themselves. That to me is quite fitting. I focused generally on University of Miami's, from the University of Miami's perspective. I posted on Facebook when I first heard about it that if I were UM's general counsel, I would be exceptionally happy today because yesterday, because if nothing else, it just gives the University of Miami some serious, serious leverage. They do have a potential cause of action depending on what the ultimate notice of allegations and ultimate sanctions are. And that basically means, in layman's terms, they have some fire to fight back with. Like, hey, you know, you want to sanction us? You want to do this? Well, listen, about that, here's what we have on you. And I think that President Donna Shalala handled this about as well as you could. I read her letter just like I'm sure everybody else did. And she nailed it. You know, she will continue to cooperate, but I'm disappointed, you know, like disappointed probably the most condescending way possible. So I think that it helps UM tremendously. I don't buy that, you know, the sanctions are going to be the same. The NCAA is not stupid. They don't want to be subject to a lawsuit where they're going to have to provide discovery, where all these things are going to come to light, because they're already getting enough flack for this. And there's already been a growing sentiment about their basically unbridled power and abuse of that power when dealing with college programs.
Yeah, me and Tano have been talking about discovery. Just those of you who don't know what discovery is, there's a lawsuit. Basically, if any emails that the NCAA has been sending, even if they're internal emails,
even text messages,
anything is really relevant to whatever the cause of action is, in UM's case, would be something to do with the investigation, they'll be able to acquire that information, UM would. And the real problem with that, if you're the NCAA, is the embarrassment factor. What happened in the case brought by Todd McNair at USC was that he found emails through the discovery process from NCAA investigators basically saying that they hated him, they had a personal vendetta against him, and they were trying to ding him. Now, these emails in the USC case have been sealed, and there's a huge battle going on as to whether those documents will be revealed to the public record where reporters can get their hands on them. If that happens, the NCAA is going to deal with a huge backlash, because I'm sure what their investigators were saying is something they don't want to come to light. In Miami's case, you know, Miami has that kind of that hammer over them where they could engage in discovery and find whatever emails were going back and forth. You know, NCAA might have known that they were doing something wrong and still gone ahead with it and been talking about how they were going to, you know, avoid getting caught or what have you. It could be anything under there. We don't know. And with the NCAA, what's interesting is nothing's really real with the NCAA. You know, the rules aren't real, as we've found out. The crimes aren't real. I mean, what are we talking about? Benihana, strippers. I mean, I think the people in this panel have probably broken all these rules in one night. you know, a good night. But there's really nothing real going on. All that's really going on here is public perception. So if the NCAA wins a battle as far as dinging UN, but gets killed in the public perception, that's really the war being lost for the NCAA because that's what they deal in. So I think in terms of that, Miami is in great position.
Right, and there's two angles to this as well. There's two angles to their liability exposure here. You know, there's the obvious fact that, like we said, Miami would be able to sue them for some kind of an intentional tort, some kind of a fraud claim, or, you know, something to that effect, in my opinion, which, you know, is, for all intents and purposes, carries potentially in seemingly unlimited amounts of damages. But the other angle of this is, let's not forget that these guys basically stuck their nose into a federal bankruptcy case. All right, the allegations here are that they paid Nevin Shapiro's attorney to shift the way that she represented Nevin to also obtain some information for the NCAA. Because, you know, you can make an argument that, loosely at least, you know, taking the player to Benihana's and spending $20 on him would be marginally related to the bankruptcy because they're trying to trace back the guy's money. You know, but this woman, rather than, you know, this attorney, rather than bill the court, you know, or send an invoice to the court for representing Nevin Shapiro, ended up sending the invoice over to the NCAA. So she basically, you know, allegedly altered the way that she represented her client to represent a third party and interfere with the judicial process at the third party's request. So the NCAA is basically messing with the federal government at this point, and that's going to be a big no-no because they've enjoyed essentially what boils down to large levels of immunity from the federal government for several years. And you know, the last thing they want now is to get on the federal government's bad side as well.
You know, this is the last thing I'm going to say because I know Larry's feeling up his imaginary girlfriend over there. But with the fact that they were using the bankruptcy proceedings to conduct depositions and subpoenas, what blows my mind is we've all known this for a while that the NCAA was using the bankruptcy proceedings to find out information. It was a sham. I mean, $100 to a multi-million-dollar bankruptcy case, it's peanuts. But we all knew all along that the only reason these questions were being asked was because of the NCAA investigation. Everybody knew that. There's no other reason why you'd be asking about a Benihana's dinner at a bankruptcy proceeding like this. So we all knew it. Bruce Feldman wrote a story about it in 2011, which he's been retweeting lately, to say, how did you guys not know this? You guys had these bills sent to you. How did you not know this? So if there's any Charles Robinsons out there that want to be a real investigative reporter and not a ghostwriter for a Ponzi scheme, or if they want to really investigate something, which might take some work, it might actually take some investigating, might actually take some, you know, turning stuff over instead of just getting what's given to you, investigate the NCAA investigation and how much knowledge they had about this issue beforehand. Because I guarantee you that somebody with some authority knew that this was going on way before this came out, because everybody else knew that the whole thing was a sham the whole time. So if any investigative reporters out there, Peter, whoever wants to be a real journalist instead of, you know, some ghostwriter like Robinson,
call Jason Whitlock.
Whitlock.
Call him.
It is completely obvious that this is – and Feldman, Bruce Feldman from CBS has hinted at this, that there is no possible way they didn't know this was going on because everybody knew it was going on.
Of course not. Of course they knew about it, though. That's the thing. You got to climb that ladder. You know, a first-year scrublet out of law school is not going to have the authority to contract with an attorney who's handling a bankruptcy organization. They're not going to be able to spend the NCAA's money. That had to come from a supervisor. That's something that gets called down. And let's be honest, what is the NCAA doing other than investigating Miami? This is like their marquee investigation. The decisions that get made are not made, you know, by the minions. They're made by the decision makers. They're made by the guys in the suits upstairs. This isn't something that – and I know what they'll try to do. You know, they're going to try to isolate it. They're going to try, oh, it was this rogue, you know, lower-level investigator that did something on the low-low and we had no idea. That's bullshit. Everybody knows it's bullshit because everybody knew back in 2011, like you said, that they were getting involved in the deposition process. Everybody knew the moment it happened. Pee-wee knew the moment it happened because he was the guy in the room giving the deposition testimony and was wondering why the fuck an NCAA rep was in the room with the parties. That's unheard of. If you're an attorney, you don't want somebody who's not a party to the case sitting in on the deposition, whispering with opposing counsel. That's amazing. It's amazing and ridiculous.
All right, Peter, let's head it over to you. On the ground level of this, it's a perception issue with UM. On the recruiting front, what are you hearing about how this is affecting within 2 weeks going down before signing day?
This is huge. The timing of this is great for Miami. I mean, just last week we were thinking, what happens if the notice of allegations came, this week? It would have been horrible for Miami because you would have been hearing all these different allegations. You know, they would have, you know how the NCAA works. They would have exaggerated things. They would have made things look probably worse than they were. And these recruits would be sitting here with 11 days to signing day. And, I mean, that's a tough thing for them to make a decision on. So this really – now Miami coaches have an angle to use when they're recruiting because, you know, all these other schools that are recruiting against Miami are definitely – have been negatively recruiting Miami with the NCAA. You know, just as an example, Alex Collins, he's a kid that has had Miami near the top of his list, but the one snag – with him has been the possibility of the NCAA coming down hard on Miami. Now the coaches can say, look what just happened. I mean, it's not going to be as bad as people originally thought, and the timing of this is just great for Miami. Even a kid like Matthew Thomas, I don't know if it necessarily changes his decision, but it really takes out a lot of the doubt in the back of these kids' minds. I mean, even the commitments. I mean, it makes for a much healthier environment around the recruiting process for these coaches and players combined.
Let me kick it over. On the university level, you've got to think President Shalala is going to be trying to push for some sort of quick settlement on this issue. Let me kick it back to the lawyers and ask what kind of possibility that is.
Well, I mean, the leverage is never going to be higher than it is right now. These cases usually don't settle in advance. I'm admittedly not an expert on NCAA issues. Dapper Slapper from our board made a great post basically saying the one thing that can happen is they can agree on stipulated facts, so Miami can accept certain facts and maybe, you know, dispute certain facts. So it'll ultimately be a compromise of what's admitted. NCAA might have wanted more to be admitted, but they'll relent because of the fact that they did so much wrong, and Miami will, you know, let a couple things in knowing that the real serious allegations aren't in there. You know, there could be a lot of things, but the bottom line is there's a perception war, and the NCAA just gave Miami a huge, huge sword swing at them if they do choose to fight that battle. So, you know, again, it's just a shift of power to Miami, and they can do many things with it.
You know, it's always better to have options than to not have options, and at this point, the University of Miami has options where they didn't before. We've already touched upon the idea. That they do have cause or grounds for a lawsuit. The other aspect of it we're talking about now, which is leverage for a beneficial settlement. Absolutely, it's possible. I like Danny, I'm not an expert on NCAA bylaws or anything like that, but you know, as Dapper Slapper did say, they can stipulate to facts. It's just going to be a utility question, mostly a financial one for them. You know, what's going to mix the best? What's going to be the most efficient way to put our university in the best situation possible, taking into account time and effort and obviously money? But again, you know, 48 hours ago they didn't have this this benefit. 48 hours ago we were sitting on 2 years of an investigation with no resolution, you know, everybody just kind of twiddling their thumbs waiting for the notice of allegations to come. For 2 weeks it was being rumored. So no matter what, you know, the general thing that we take away from this is UM is in a much better position than they were just 48 hours ago.
All right, let's go in another direction. There's been an overwhelming, at least in my opinion, positive reaction by the media with this story, being more in supportive of the University of Miami, kind of shunning the NCAA and saying, man, this is kind of ridiculous. Again, let's go back to the lawyers, man. What have you thought about the media's reaction after this story broke about the NCAA?
The only entity that the media hates more than the University of Miami is the NCAA, so it's really just kind of a layup for them. I mean, it's certainly a good thing for Miami because really – what can Miami do to lose this momentum? I mean, what more can happen to Miami? The allegations of the notice of allegations are going to be the same things that were in the initial Yahoo report, and I'm sure they'll be less shocking because they won't have the snazzy graphics, you know, that Charles Robinson had, that little those little boxes that he had. Without those, I mean, what do you have? People going on yachts, people going to eat at Benihana's, people bowling. I mean, people bowling in Miami is probably the least salacious thing that goes on in the city. And that was the centerpiece of his story. So, you know, to answer your question, it's just I don't see Miami losing anything at this point for the public perception because they can't – nothing can come out that hasn't come out yet. So it's only uphill for perception for Miami, and that's the most important thing.
You know, Miami's garnered a lot of attention, both negative and positive, throughout the years. And the media's obviously, you could say, has had a vendetta against Miami for quite a while, or at least just like a negative obsession with it. And, you know, we all know why. Most of it was just because we were so damn good and we were so damn brash about it. I think there's something to be said about a university that, despite, you know, everything around it seemingly crumbling, has managed to stick together, has managed to really reemphasize the U family mantra, and has managed to create a perception, both academically and athletically, that they're on the way up. And I think that at the very least, the media can respect that. You saw, you know, everybody is has nothing but great things to say about Al Golden. Everybody was pleasantly surprised, even though most Miami fans maybe weren't, with the way that the season turned out with all the young guys. And they see positive things coming through in the program. And, you know, basketball obviously speaks for itself at this point with the big win and the 5-0 ACC record and whatnot. So I think that the media at the very least can respect the fact that even through these allegations and even through an remarkably long process, we've managed to stay not just afloat, but kind of regain a little bit of prestige in the general public's eyes.
Peter?
Yeah, I mean, like Tanner was saying, obviously the media has always kind of had it out for Miami. And throughout this entire NCAA investigation, whatever you want to call it, the media has definitely been against Miami. I remember when this thing first broke, what was it, a couple years ago by now, and the media was just ripping Miami apart. But I think these new developments, you know, with the USC case, how they've taken them to court, the Penn State thing, I think people have just kind of gotten fed up with the way the NCAA operates, and it's definitely working in Miami's favor now.
All right, let's try to wrap this up a little bit. We got a lot to deal with in this show, but we're going to wrap it up with some predictions, guys. We're going to start with Peter. Do we skate?
We skate. I think so.
D?
I mean, we already taken two bowl bands, so we can't skate. I mean, we already got screwed. But I definitely think that compared to – if you would have asked me what we were going to get 2 weeks ago and what we're going to get now, in that comparison, yeah, we're skating.
Christy Yamaguchi, man, we skate.
Apollo Anton Golden.
All right. Well, we're going to triple axel out of this discussion, and we're going to take a quick break to catch our breath on this. We're going to play some music, but on the flip side, we're going to go a little bit more in depth about the hiring of James Coley, and we're going to go real deep into recruiting with Peter.
Yeah. Guilty until proven innocent, huh? That's how we working, huh? Okay. Before me, there was many. After me, there would be none. I am the one. Uh-huh. Okay. I see how we playing. I get it down, anxiously, the public can't wait. Had to have it way before its release date. Jigga get irate, press get it f***ed up. Took me 1.8, but I had to get it straight. Get the CD, 12-inch vinyl, get the tape. Jigga give it food for thought, dog, get a plate. I get it down, get it crunk when I get in a state of mind. It was mine, it's mine, nobody get the take. I don't bend, break, fold, scratch, scroll down my mental Rolodex. See these words, I just don't know. I know stress, drama, upset my mama, arrested.
I know, Jace, I love you, man. I'm guilty, I'm getting money where me, I still love you.
Bell, 50 thou, still riding with
I ain't trying to collide with folk, but I don't want folk taking chicken for Joe. I guess you just woke. Good morning.
You can't touch me, no, you can't touch me. You try to charge me, but I'm not guilty. I've got all of my money.
All right, we are back. Like we said at the top of the show, Miami also has a new offensive coordinator, James Coley. He was an assistant under Jimbo Fisher. D, you were one of the first to break this news about Coley to Miami. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I saw the tip on the Rivals message board. Basically, I guess a friend of Coley's hinted that his name would be in the mix. So I call a source who was really close to Coley, spent a lot of time with him, and basically, I mean, Coley was interested in this job from the jump, didn't need a lot of convincing. And what struck me is that Coley was really in between Miami and the Dallas Cowboys running back job. He wasn't really thinking about having a future at FSU. He felt his career had stagnated. You've heard all the rumors about Jimbo being tough to deal with from my conversations with this guy and obviously the results of so many coaches leaving the staff. I believe those rumors are true and that Jimbo is tough to work with. But he really jumped on the opportunity. He's half Cuban, Miami guy, went to Miami High. It was really kind of a natural fit as far as coming down here, recruiting. And what catches my eye is somebody just posted a picture on the board of Golden, Coley, and Cristobal kind of side by side. And it's almost like you're looking at twins, really, when you look at these guys, or triplets. Because just their passion, you know, the intensity that they recruit with, they all made their name as recruiters first and foremost. Coach Golden got his nickname Golden Al, his Twitter name. That's actually a nickname he got as a recruiter when he signed Ahmad Brooks, who you now see on the San Francisco 49ers. That's when he got the nickname Golden Al because he recruited Brooks. He just showed a great touch with recruiting. Cristobal obviously got his name with recruiting at the Miami Hurricanes. You know, got Reggie Youngblood, who's the number one offensive lineman in the country at that time. A bunch of other big catches as a recruiter. And Coley has obviously made his name as a recruiter. So we look at those guys, just their age, the way they conduct themselves. It really just they're very, very similar. And if they can control their egos, I think that's going to be a triumvirate that really does a lot of great things with this program. And I think Coach Golden is the type of guy, it's almost like, you talk about the big three with the Miami Heat. You have Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh. Wade's the perfect guy to kind of be the glue of that with his personality. He doesn't need to be the show. He's comfortable in his own skin. And I think Al Golden is very much like that. And he'll let Coley be Coley. He'll let Cristobal be Cristobal and really take this program to great heights with these three guys.
I think that the main thing to take from this is just kind of seeing the pattern and the kind of coach that Coach Golden is looking for, the kind of assistant coach that Coach Golden is looking for. You know, we used to say back in the day that Miami was like a stepping stone job to the NFL. Well, I think that what Golden's trying to do now is make the Miami coordinator and assistant coaching positions stepping stones to head coaching gigs. He's hiring younger guys with ambition who want to be not just position coaches, not just coordinators, but head coaches. We all know that Mario Cristobal wants to be a head coach. In fact, many speculate that he wants to be the next head coach at the U. It's no surprise that James Coley wants to be a head coach. He's got ambition. He's got a drive to advance in the coaching ranks, and he wasn't seeing that opportunity at FSU, which isn't hard to see considering that he wasn't even allowed to call plays. So really, Golden just, to use the board mantra, he gets it. He gets it. He understands the concept of hiring young, hungry coaches who are trying to build their resumes, who are trying to work their way up to get where they want to be professionally. And it's basically just a win-win for Miami. You work yourself up by showing or by working hard and helping Miami get back to the top, and you're basically write yourself a head coaching ticket in the NCAA, or even better.
It's an amazing, amazing hire. I've been a fan of his for a couple of years now. I mean, just talking to a lot of these coaches down here, a lot of these players over the past couple years, a lot of these recruits, I meant to say, they're just drawn to him. It's something about his personality. I mean, you just look at him. He has that glow about him. You know, he has that slick back hair, the sunglasses. I mean, there's three things to say about him. He's well respected, well orchestrated, and well connected. Those three things down here are, I mean, that's everything in South Florida. I've heard so many stories about this guy being down in Miami, I mean, multiple times a week just to recruit. I mean, I'm telling you, this guy is going to be a slam dunk hire down here. I could not be more excited as far as the recruiting goes. And, I mean, good luck to anybody that wants to come down to South Florida and try to take someone away from Miami.
We all know he's a monster recruiter, very well respected. As Peter said, he's also well connected. But let's talk a little bit about X's and O's. Danny, what kind of offense do you think we could see from James Coley here at Miami?
You know, FSU is not really a gimmick-oriented offense. I mean, it is a fairly pro-style offense by college standards. So I don't think you're going to see a huge shift. With that said, we don't really know what Coley's play-calling style is. I mean, this has been Jimbo Fisher's offense. He was known as an innovator at the high school level. Everybody that's worked with him at the high school level says the guy's really bright, really creative, you know, and is an offensive mind. Played quarterback in high school. I mean, this is his chance to really show what he's about. So, for all we know, I mean, he could be the next Malzahn. We really don't know what he brings because we haven't seen him do it yet. But I think the thing about Coley is he understands that players run the show. I mean, he's been around talented players his entire career. He grew up in Miami. He knows the players run the show. And he has a pro-style quarterback in Morris with a cannon for an arm. He's got a solid group of receivers, no number one, but solid group of receivers. Two good tight ends now with Sandlin coming in. Great offensive line. Duke Johnson, obviously. I would be shocked if he didn't play towards his talent. And, you know, it's funny. People talk about the fact that he's inexperienced. He's getting the keys handed to a really good offense that could have the potential to be a great offense. And they're worried about handing that to somebody that lacks experience. But if you think about it, he's more experienced in the conference than almost any candidate could possibly be. I mean, he's seen all these teams. He's game planned for all these teams. He knows what it takes to win in the ACC. So in certain respects, he's unproven. But in certain respects, he's also turnkey. So it's going to be fun to watch, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to gauge what kind of offense he's going to run. You know, you can't just look at, first of all, you can't look at what FSU ran because he wasn't calling the plays. I'm sure he maybe had a say in the game planning and in and out, but you know that Jimbo Fisher had his hand in a lot of that. So the next thing you may look at is Florida International. And what can you glean from his 1 year coordinating for a 1-11 football team with a first time head coach at the helm? Probably not much. I mean, they ran some variations of the spread. Their quarterback, I think, was their second leading rusher with over 500 yards rushing. And I think, if I remember correctly, the infamous Ned, the guy on crutches from the UM-FIU fight, was actually their leading rusher with, like, you know, something like 550 yards. They spread the ball around an awful lot. I don't think they really used a tight end. But again, look, if he's any kind of a decent coach, he's going to be able to adapt, see the talent that he has around him, and adapt accordingly. No coach is necessarily, especially a young up-and-coming coach, which I guess you could assume Coley, but no coach like that is tied into a particular scheme or set in his ways. I'm sure that he'll work together with Golden and Crystal Ball and the rest of the offensive coaches to develop a scheme that best utilizes the talent. And that's really the best you can hope for.
And Tano brought something up that I was going to mention, was the use of the tight ends. I mean, Florida State has never really been known as a team that uses the tight end very well. And you look at what Nick O'Leary's done the last couple of years with them. He's kind of, hasn't lived up to expectations. And Miami's going to have a couple of really good tight ends over the next few years with Sandlin and Clive Walford. Obviously, Dobard's coming in now. So I'm really going to be interested to see how he integrates them into the offense. Because, I mean, you have two – with Sandlin and Walford, you have two NFL tight ends right there. So they're going to have to be used in the offense. So I'm really excited to see what he draws up with those guys, considering that wasn't something that we saw at Florida State. Obviously, he wasn't calling the plays, but he's going to have definitely a different set of weapons here than what he had at Florida State. And also something else that's interesting is that at Florida State, he had a lot of these bigger wide receivers, and that's not something he really has at Miami right now. So, we'll see what differs there, but the tight ends are definitely going to be a big part of the offense.
How do you guys see this working out with Cristobal, Carroll, and Coley? Essentially, three guys who have been brought up as tight end coaches for the most part, coaching both quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends on the same roster.
Well, you know, I mean, for one thing, James Coley was a high school quarterback. I mean, he's actually played the position. Jed Fish probably can't throw a football further than I can. So that's a little bit of a change. Now, obviously, Jed Fish was an NFL quarterback coach. So, you know, it's kind of a give and take. But I don't think there's going to be an issue there. You hope that what Fish really did with Morris was teach him about football. You know, we talk about Fish developing quarterbacks, which he certainly did, but he wasn't out there teaching them firsthand about mechanics and how to throw a football, and even the footwork. From where I sit, the improvement that happened with Ja'Cory and Stephen Morris was just their understanding of the game, understanding of concepts. You know, you can see it in their turnover ratios, how quickly those decreased. I mean, people don't talk about the fact that Stephen Morris threw the ball over 400 times and only threw 7 interceptions. It's really kind of remarkable considering that the knock on him going into the season was that he couldn't protect the ball. And obviously you saw what happened with Ja'Cory his first year and the turnaround he made with the turnovers. So point being, you hope that Jed Fish has taught Stephen Morris about football and he'll take those lessons to this new offense with James Coley, and that won't be an issue.
Yeah, here's the thing. Coley, if I remember correctly, was quarterback's coach for a season again at FIU for whatever that's where quarterback's coach OC. As far as the relationship between the three of them, well, we already know that they've shuffled, Carroll out to be the wide receivers coach. I don't really think it matters, to be quite honest with you. I don't. You could tell that Al Golden's building this staff to recruit. All right, football is football. Obviously, ideally, you want to have a coach for each position that's knowledgeable or that's traditional, a traditional coach. Wide receivers coach, I've always thought, is one of the more, not to downplay it, but is one of the more easier positions to transition into or to coach. There's not as much nuance and technique necessarily as, you know, something like offensive line or tight end or quarterback, obviously. So, you know, that's one thing. The second thing is, you know, as far as quarterbacks go, I think that we're kind of fortunate in that we have a senior quarterback coming back. I think that helps an awful lot. And obviously you're going to be getting some young kids on campus that are going to be, you know, in need of some tutelage. So, you know, I really think that, the judgment on whether or not Coley can coach quarterbacks will come as we see the younger guys develop.
You know, I'm going to have to kind of go against Tano right there as far as the receivers go, because, you know, Aubrey Hill was here for a few years, and he was considered the ace recruiter, which is Carroll's, calling card. And obviously, Hill brought in all these big-time receivers, and a lot of them kind of flamed out. Look what McDonald did here, and McDonald was, in my opinion, the best coach on the staff, position coach. Look what he did with Philip Dorsett. Look what he did with Hearns, Rashawn Scott. That's something that I'm kind of concerned about. I want to see how Brennan Carroll develops these receivers, because, you know, the talent can only take them so far. But as far as the nuances, I mean, we'll see what happens. But that's just something I'm a little wary of right now.
All right, before we move on to the recruiting aspect of all this, because it is big, I do want to just touch on our little brothers up north. Florida State has lost a lot of coaches this offseason, not only Coley to the University of Miami. Damian Craig moved on to Auburn. Stoops and DJ Elliott go to Kentucky. Eddie Grand goes to Cincinnati. That's a lot of their main recruiters, a bulk of their staff. Is there something in the water going on up there, guys, or is it just – FSU had a great season, and their coaches are reaping the rewards?
No, I think there's no question there's something going on up there, and it's really kind of leaked out. Again, speaking to somebody who's close to Coley, this was a factor in his decision, stuff that had nothing to do with football. And, you know, it's obvious. the fact that they lost the Florida game the way that they did, to me, raised so many red flags. Because Florida really is a flawed football team. That offense is terrible. It reminded me of our offense in 2005 with Kyle Ryan and Tyrone Moss. I mean, really a poor, poor offense. For them to beat up FSU the way they did in the biggest game of the year, during the biggest season of the last decade and a half of FSU football, raises a lot of concerns about what's going on over there because we know what talent is there. So I certainly think that there's issues there. And, you know, as much talent as there is at FSU, there's even more distractions. And when you get talented guys in that environment, a lot of times they tend to bust. That's the reason why a lot of FSU players struggle in the pros. They go to Tallahassee expecting to chase tail, and they don't develop the way that their talent indicates that they should be developing. The best players to come out of FSU, you're talking about Charlie Ward, Deion Sanders, Warwick Dunn, Derek Brooks, some of the cleanest, best character football players that you'll ever find. Those are the guys that really excel in FSU. So I think between the turmoil with the coaching staff, the turnover there, and the fact that you got guys like Kelvin Benjamin, James Wilder that are just, you know, loose individuals, for lack of a better word. I see a lot of this talent that's there right now being wasted on the current track.
I think that, well, first of all, as a preface, don't really care. Fuck them. But if we're really going to get into it, I think what you're seeing is a result of SEC arrogance not necessarily matching the product on the field. And when Jimbo came in, everybody was like, he's going to bring an SEC mentality. You know, he's a disciple of, you know, the great one, so to speak, you know. And what we've seen is, for just lack of a better word, mediocrity. And at some point, that's going to catch up to you. And, I mean, not having any inside information and just kind of speculating and trying to be perceptive a little bit, I think that's what's basically going on, is that people are starting, the act is starting to wear thin a little bit up there.
All right, guys, let's get into the meat of this discussion, which is what James Coley brings on the recruiting front. He's got a ton of connections down here in South Florida, and coaches seemingly love the guy. What are you hearing from the coaches and from the players about James Coley coming to Miami?
They love it. I've talked to six coaches down here, and they love Coley. A few of them are actually Miami fans, and they've told me in the past, even before I've talked to them about Coley, and they told me, man, this guy is the real deal. If Miami ever got him, it'd be scary. I mean, I remember talking to one of these guys back in the season, back in October, I think it was, and he was just telling me, man, this guy is something else. Miami better watch out for him in South Florida. And now that he's actually at Miami, that's a scary combination. That's why, I mean, I keep harping on it, but this is just going to be incredible for Miami. Like I mentioned today earlier, it's funny because I tweeted out last night, I said I expect James Coley to be Miami's next offensive coordinator. And Jamal Carter tweeted back, he said, that would be love. Like, this is a Miami commitment, and we know he's Miami all the way through. We had him on the podcast a few weeks ago. I mean, he's orange and green to the core. And this is a guy who, I mean, he committed to Miami back in summer. Coley was his recruiter back then, and that's how much he loved him. I mean, he remembers the relationship he had with him. He remembers, I mean, the type of personality he is. And that, I mean, to me, it's just going to be – It's going to be something that we've never seen down here. I mean, there's been times when Miami locks down South Florida, but right now it's going to be a special time for recruiting, especially with the 2014 class that's coming up as far as the talent down here, because there's so much elite talent in that class. And then if this whole NCAA thing shakes out like it might for Miami, the scholarship reductions may not be as bad as we previously thought they would be. So it's really just a perfect storm with Coley getting hired, with the talent here next year, and with the NCAA thing coming together. I mean, it's a perfect storm.
Yeah, I you know, I tend to agree. I don't have the dearth of recruiting knowledge that that Pete has. I'm not as in touch with the game anymore. But, you know, the guy is a proven recruiter. 2010 ESPN Recruiter of the Year, I think. You know, he's credited with a lot of securing a lot of big name recruits for FSU. But, you know, more importantly than anything, he is or was FSU's main go-to South Florida recruiting guy. And what is Miami's loss is Florida's, or what is Miami's gain is Florida State's loss. So we've been able to strengthen our presence in the most fertile recruiting hotbed in the country, which also just happens to be our backyard. And at the same time, in the same move, substantially weakened our arch rivals' presence in the same area. So it's a double win, in my opinion. And you know, you could already tell that he's going to work. You know, that you heard a couple different in-home visits. You heard he was already on campus working, and so he's already definitely hitting the ground running, and we'll see where he takes us. I think that we'll see more in 2014, obviously, but you know, I think Pete's already mentioned that it's already having an effect for the 2013 class.
Yeah, now, I mean, it's really just kind of a culture developing between Golden, Cristobal, Coley. Just the relentlessness. I mean, these guys, they don't get outworked. When we were in the Shannon era, how many times did we hear about a kid saying that Miami got on him before such and such, before Urban Meyer, before whoever else? Never. I mean, we never were first on these players. Golden started that trend of being first, being the most aggressive with these local guys. Their biggest competition for being first was Cristobal at FIU, although obviously he was fighting an uphill battle, and James Coley at FSU. Now they're part of the team, so Miami will never, ever, ever, ever get outworked for a local product that they want with Cristobal, Coley, and Golden on the coaching staff. It's just not going to happen. So that's exciting.
All right, guys, listen, I love the hire from a recruiting aspect. I got a little questions about the X's and O's and what it brings from the coaching situation in regards to wide receivers, because I really felt McDonald really helped the wide receivers out, and I'd like to see a little bit from that, but I'm willing to let it play out. But there's no doubt, I think Golden, Coley, and Cristobal, I mean, they're three of the four horsemen of the apocalypse coming down to lock down South Florida. Those guys just have a presence and an aura, and they work harder than anybody on the planet when it comes to recruiting. I think we're going to love them in that area, especially within the next 2 weeks. And Peter, this is going to have a huge impact on recruiting down the stretch here with 2 weeks leading up to signing day. You've been talking to recruits all day. You're also at the Duke game. So what are you hearing? What is the vibe you're getting from the batch of uncommitted recruits that still remain for the Canes leading up to signing day?
Well, let me get into the effect that Coley has on these kids really quickly. The main two kids that it's really going to have a big effect on is Matthew Thomas and Denver Kirkland. Coley was their main recruiter for Florida State. As it is already, Miami had a great shot to land both of them. You know, there's obviously people on the FSU side saying they were leading. There's different things out there, but there's no way that you can say that Florida State has the upper hand on Miami at this point on these two kids in particular. I mean, this guy was recruiting for Florida State, and now he's gone. I mean, he's now with Miami, the team who already had a great shot with them. I thought Thomas was going to be a hurricane before, and now, I can pretty much say he's going to be a hurricane. Kirkland, I'd say the same thing. You know, there's some lingering grades issues possibly, but I think he should be okay there. The next two kids, Alex Collins and Stacy Coley, are in similar situations. The James Coley hiring is not really going to switch their decisions, because he wasn't really involved directly with their recruitments. Eddie Grant was the guy that was recruiting Alex Collins for Florida State, and obviously he left last month, so Florida State's kind of been out of it with Collins for a little bit now, but this could be the thing that kind of pushes Miami over the top with Collins. Same thing with Coley. Coley is, I mean, he's still between Miami and Florida State. Lawrence Dazzi, the the wide receivers coach of Florida State's been the guy that has been handling Coley's recruitment ever since Eddie Grant left, same thing. And him and Coley and Dazzy have formed a good relationship. So, you know, Florida State's still in the mix for Coley. Definitely more so than they are with Thomas, Kirkland, or Collins. But, I mean, I would be very surprised if James Coley does not put his hand in the Stacey Coley sweepstakes now, considering that this is a guy that could make a significant impact for his offense next year, an offense that already has a plethora of big-time talent. So I definitely see him now getting involved. I see him probably being there with the in-home visits. He'll be there. I bet you he'll be visiting him at school within the next week. So that's going to be a very interesting thing to watch over the next few days, Stacey Coley and James Coley. You know, Jermaine Grace, Florida State wasn't really in the picture, so that doesn't really have an effect on things. And but he's going to be choosing on signing day. Still feel good about Miami's chances there. Another interesting prospect to bring up is Keith Bryant. A lot of people say, oh, the connection with Florida State, Miami, James Coley. But Coley hasn't been the guy recruiting him. Obviously, Coley's the guy on the offensive side of the ball. That's not the case with Thomas, who's a linebacker. But Odell Haggins, the defensive line coach for Florida State, has been the guy that's been – he's been talking to Keith since sophomore year. So he's the one that's really been on him since the beginning. So I don't think that's really going to have an effect. Unless something changes, I expect Keith Bryant to choose Florida State. And this James Coley thing I don't think has an effect on that. So that I've seen a lot of people asking about that, but honestly, that's not really going to have a factor on Keith's decision.
Do you guys think there are any recruits that maybe we haven't quite heard anything from yet that could get Miami attention in the next 2 weeks leading up to signing day?
Well, I mean, one guy that really is kind of hung around and stayed in the picture and is actually being recruited by Coley at FSU is the fullback from Shaolin, New York, Staten Island, Augustus Edwards. He's kind of hung around, and he'll be visiting in early February. And I would not be shocked if either him or Barber or another running back came in with Alice Collins. You know, obviously Alice Collins is a centerpiece, but it wouldn't shock me to see him come in with another back. There's a need there. Eduardo Clemente's future is kind of up in the air. Dallas Crawford, really more of a utility player, does a little bit of everything, but it's not a true back. Danny Dillard, to me, more of an H-back type. So I wouldn't be surprised if we signed two backs, the second of which obviously would be somebody that's not getting talked about that much, either Augustus Edwards from Shaolin, New York, or possibly Barber from down south.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to talk about guys that you don't expect, because at this point, I mean, I think our expectations have skyrocketed as it compares to even just a month or two ago. So, you know, somebody who may be under the radar, I mean, you know, they're still visiting new kids now. That you know, there's reports that they're talking to kids that they haven't talked to in a while. You know, if I would have said Rashard Robinson a month ago, everybody would have been like, oh, you know, maybe a 10%, 20% chance. But now, you know, it's getting maybe closer to being a flip of the coin. So I guess I'll still go with Rashard Robinson and, you know, see if we can't pry him away from LSU. But I don't know how much of a surprise that would be at this point. I just don't really have an exciting answer.
One name with Coley connections back to FSU is Eddie Jackson, the receiver, defensive back from Boyd Anderson. I don't think he'll be able to qualify based on things that I've heard, discussions I've had with people that are close to the situation. But he could be a sign-in-place guy, maybe a prep guy for a year, maybe even JUCO for 2 years, who knows. But that's a kid that, I mean, he had an incredible season, and he's definitely Miami caliber. Alabama's on him hard. Florida State's still on him hard. And the interesting connection there is also that he is best friends with Stacey Coley. Now, like I said, I don't think he'll qualify, but if they told him, look, you can go to prep for a year, come back to Miami, and then you'll be playing with Stacey. That might be a little interesting combination there, because, like I said, this guy is definitely Miami caliber receiver, corner, safety. He's someone that's intriguing to me.
All right, you talked a little bit about him earlier, Pete. I want you to go a little in depth in regards to Keith Bryant. You've talked to him a lot throughout this process. 2 weeks before signing day, do you have any kind of read on him?
The read I get is Florida State, honestly. But, you know, people say he's trolling, and they're probably not far off. You know, you see what he puts on Twitter. He's been doing that for a long, long time now. I asked him today, I asked him what he thought about Coach Coley coming to Miami, and he said, "I don't know him." I mean, that's just Keith. I mean, that's how he is. He's not gonna, at this time of year, he's not gonna give anything away. But it just doesn't seem like he's getting those same vibes with Miami that he was earlier in the process. I mean, it's gonna sound ridiculous to Miami fans, but he was, in the beginning of the process, Miami was the only school he wanted to go to. He was dying for the Miami offer more than any other offer. I mean, that was the school. But, I mean, what happens in this recruiting process is, you know, other things come. There's a coach that he really likes, like Odell Haggins. His mom, there's rumors that his mom, he told me himself before. He told me a couple months ago, he said, "My mom wants me to get away. My mom wants me to grow up." And he said the only way that she said he could grow up is by getting, you know, maybe things have changed months ago. And that's something that's stuck with me, because that's when he told me that is when things kind of started to shift in Florida State's direction. I'm not getting anything from him right now that would say Miami. But again, I'm not going to cross him off the list just because we know how crazy he is with this stuff. So he could tell me tomorrow that he's eliminated Florida State. It could be that simple. I mean, that's how he is. But if signing day was tomorrow, it'd be Florida State.
Well, Miami seems to be building a little bit of momentum rolling into signing day. We had a commit last week named Ufomba Kamalu from Butler County Community College. He had a monster championship game back in early December. Things started to get heavy on the recruiting front with him. We've all had a chance to take a look at his film. Any thoughts on this kid as a player so far? I know, D, you were not thinking he had too much technique in his game, and I got to agree, but you got to like what you see in the measurables area.
No, physically, he's exactly what I've been screaming for this defensive line. We need guys that have some length, are tall, but are also powerful. I mean, we just haven't had guys like that on the roster. Really, the only guy that I could think of that's like that on the roster, maybe Olsen Pierre, but really Jelani Hamilton was supposed to be that guy. He hasn't developed. I mean, he's still super early, especially if you're talking about defensive linemen. But that's been a need on this roster. You look at Alabama, you look at LSU, teams like that, they have 6'5", 6'4", big guys, you know, falling off the truck. I mean, they have a ton of them. So that was something that Miami needed to acquire, and this guy physically fits the bill. Seems like a very talented kid. You see him in his videos. He looks flexible. You can catch that right away, just his flexibility, has some speed, obviously, you know, great size. The issue, though, is we need a guy like that who can play right away, because there's a huge need for it. We're playing too many snaps with Chickalo, too many snaps with Shayon Green. We're just kind of weird when we go to these odd fronts, which we did quite a bit towards the end of the season, because we don't have that long, you know, two-gap defensive end. So there's a huge need for a guy with exactly this guy's body type. Unfortunately, I don't know if he has the skill set yet to come in and play in the ACC at that level. His coach expressed reservations about whether he can make that transition right now. I didn't see that kind of technique on tape for him to play that role. But who knows? He could be a fast learner, and ultimately he'll have 3 years to play three. So we need all the talent that we can get on the defensive line, and he looks like he has a lot of it.
Any thoughts, Pete?
You know, he kind of came out of nowhere. I'm not particularly jumping for joy about the pickup. I mean, like D said, it's a position of need, obviously. and he has the size. The thing that kind of is a bummer with him is that he can't redshirt, which is kind of a big issue, considering that he definitely needs the work with technique. You know, he has the size already, so maybe he could give us some valuable snaps. You know, third and short. He's going to be, like he said, we have a lot of these hybrid guys already. We needed one of these bigger guys. I mean, he'll probably play defensive end. He could slide in defensive tackle every now and then. But we needed one of these guys that could set the edge like that. And, I mean, we'll see how he develops. I hope he's not another Darius Smith.
Yeah, in my opinion, this is what NFL teams would basically call a need get. Miami doesn't have a stack and shed end on the team right now. As D said, Jelani Hamilton looks like that guy, but he's not there yet. I don't know if Kamalu is there yet, but he's going to be thrown into the fire pretty early just simply because of need. He's got the spark numbers you look for. I think we'll see a bit of him maybe toward the end of this year, and I'm really interested to see what Coach Franklin could do with the guy. One other guy that a lot of people are bringing up is Bo Sandlin. He's a big, big piece of this recruiting class. There's a lot to be made that UM hasn't necessarily announced his enrollment yet, but he's 6'6", 250. If you look at two of the top tight ends that are going to be coming out in this year's draft, Zach Ertz and Tyler Eifert, this is that kind of guy. Pete, can you talk a little bit about what his status is right now so people can get an understanding of what's going on with him?
Well, he actually let Tito Banach know a little earlier today that he's enrolled in Miami, so that should clear up any questions about that. It was kind of peculiar, though, that we hadn't really heard anything. I had posted last week or a couple weeks ago that he had enrolled because someone told me they saw him on campus, someone that I trust, so, you know, they said that he was there with the team and everything, so it surprised me these last couple of days when there were rumors that he wasn't there yet. And then it kind of got me worried, too, because Tito asked him a few days ago if he was there, and he was posting pictures in California, so there was definitely some doubt in my mind for a little bit, but then he let Tito know today that he was officially enrolled, so that's definitely big news.
I haven't actually seen any of your posts on this about Sandlin as a player, man. What you've had to check out his film. He's got a bunch of it. What do you think of him as a player?
The first thing that jumps out to me about Sandlin is his size. I mean, this guy's broad-shouldered. He's a big guy, very developed, obviously coming as a junior. So he's ready to play right away from a physical standpoint. He is physical, just his personality, the way he plays. You saw him knock guys out both as a blocker and running with the ball. In his clips, he looks very athletic, good hands. You know, you wish he had bigger hands, bigger mitts, but I mean, he catches the ball well. Not the fastest guy, not probably like a 4.7, 4.8 type guy, but quick, athletic, really just a nice complement to what Walford brings. You know, you had Asante Cleveland, who just hasn't developed like we would have hoped. David Perry, Dyron Dye, not really pure tight ends, not very versatile. You know, they can block a little bit, run fast in a straight line. They're really not going to catch the ball. This Sandlin brings all those attributes, and when you combine it with Walford, really brings a nice dimension and kind of gives us what we hoped we would have with Cleveland and Walford. Now we actually will have, hopefully, with Sandlin and Walford.
All right, guys. What do you think the vibe is right now around the Hecht in regards to recruiting? This is going to be the last question before we wrap up this show, but 2 weeks before signing day, how is the staff feeling right now?
Well, I think they have to be feeling really good about it. It's been a roller coaster the last month or so, but we touched on it earlier. I mean, with the recent developments in the last 2 days, I mean, you just added one of the top five recruiters in the country, and they're already sitting pretty well with a lot of these kids. So you have to be feeling good about where they're standing, especially considering the elite talent that is on the board for them. It's not just that these are guys that, you know, they're fighting for with South Florida, you know, Cincinnati, schools like that. Because when Golden came here 2 years ago, we were taking a lot of those kids like that. No disrespect to someone like Jawan Blue last year, but he was kind of a guy that we knew the entire time if we offered, then he was going to be a hurricane. So these guys are legitimate 4-star, 5-star talents that win you championships. So to have the opportunity to close with something like this, I mean, it has to be an extremely exciting time inside those coach meetings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think I'm echoing. Oh, well. Does anybody else hear that, or is it just me?
Go.
Nobody hears it?
You're good. Go.
Okay. I think that we obviously have reason to feel good. That part is obvious enough. I don't even think that the staff has time to feel anything until after signing day. These guys are just working around the clock. You know, a lot of effective recruiting is not just what you tell a kid when you're sitting in his living room. Obviously, that's a huge part of it. But it really just boils down to plain old good old-fashioned hard work and the time that they put into it. And the staff is, I think it's going to prove to be absolutely tireless. One of the things that we were saying before the whole issue of coaching turnover came about with first McDonald and then obviously Jed Fish leaving was that no matter what happened on signing day, I knew that I would sleep well knowing that the coaching staff did everything humanly possible to land these kids and that I was satisfied with the effort that they showed in the work that they put in. And you know, that's something that it seems simple and arbitrary, but you know, it's not something that we as Hurricanes fans necessarily felt all too often prior to this regime taking over. So I felt already good about it, and then to add an elite recruiter like Coley is icing on the cake. And really, more than anything, the feeling I get is excitement to see how this class wraps up. And I think we kind of already know how it's going to wrap up, and we're all just excited to make it official. And that sounds, you know, that's really awesome. But more than anything, I want to see already how we get started with the 2014 kids. And that's going to be big. I want to see, how we can, how effectively we can recruit that 2014 class, which is going to be, an excellent class top to bottom.
You know, what's funny about this class is when it comes to the real work and these out of state kids, the hay's kind of in the barn. I mean, they've already landed a top 10, potentially top 5 quarterback in Olsen, a 5-star caliber defensive end in Muhammad, Bo Sandland from out of state, Alex Figueroa, who I think has a chance to be one of the top 5 players in the entire class, an offensive line class that they really like. This is all out of state. They've done the work out of state. That's already done. So as far as how they feel going to this home stretch, it really comes out to South Florida, and everything is trending straight up between Alice Collins, obviously Matthew Thomas and Denver Kirkland, even Stacy Coley. We're seeing some good things with him. He's already made his FSU visit and still visited us afterwards for the Duke game. So just a lot of positive evidence with these South Florida kids. And the out-of-state kids that you sweat about, they're already done. So as you get closer and closer to signing day, you got to feel good about having these South Florida kids in play with the pressure from mom, the pressure from school. Everything's kind of pointing in their favor rather than with these out-of-state kids where you're just kind of sweating and holding on. So they got to be feeling good.
I definitely agree. I think coming into signing day, I'm feeling really good about a lot of these kids, and I definitely think this is going to be one of the strongest closes that the school has seen in a long time, right around signing day. Well, that'll about wrap this one up. Be on the lookout for an interview with another recruit in the next week or so. Pete's going to have something lined up for us. If you got any questions, comments, want to bring the lulls, you want to impersonate another poster, you want to send us praise or make fun of us, call us and leave a voicemail, 786-233-9164. Or you can email us at canesinsight@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes, and hit up Danny for a t-shirt. For D Money, for Tano, and for Peter, I'm Larry, and...
Well. Bye.
We don't care about nobody except this you. We don't.
And if you're not done with that,
you can all go to fucking hell! You can all go to hell!